Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Lindsay Whistle-Fenton. Tina Williams Brewer is a Pittsburgh-based fiber artist who specializes in making story quilts. Her work has been displayed in more than 50 major venues in the U.S. and at international venues such as the U.S. Embassy in Ghana. Known for her artistic exploration of African-American history, her quilts often focus on family, women and children, and spirituality. Brewer is one of four artists profiled in the WPSU TV program, Pennsylvania Folklore, Woven Together. Tina Williams Brewer, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you, Lindsay. I'm pleased to be here today.
You started your career as an interior decorator, and you've worked in other art mediums like pottery and photography. How did you ultimately come to establish yourself as a fiber artist?
It was quite by happenstance. I started visiting with some friends on Wednesday night who were quilters, and I just needed an outlet from being a housekeeper and mother, and it took it from there. I enjoyed the conversation, but I also started to feel really connected to the fabric. And so I had an auntie who had a quilt top that she wanted me to work with. And she's from Kentucky, and she was a midwife. And she said, would you quilt this for me? And I did. And it took me about a year to do it. But during the time that I was interacting with the fabric, I started to kind of feel the energy of the people who wore the fabric. So I thought there was something to the scrap quilting process. And so I am a scrap quilter, and I had fabrics left over from my time as an interior decorator. So I just chose to use what I have. And that's my motto now. I use what I have. I very seldom go out and purchase things. And people give me fabric as well.
So all of the fabric has meaning. That's one of the things I love about your quilts. So you talked about your process of getting started and coming to connect with the energy of the fabric. What is the full process of learning how to quilt look like? I mean, you didn't become the master artist you are overnight, and I imagine it's not as simple as taking a class or two or watching a YouTube video. What was that journey like for you?
Well, basically for me, it was about gaining the confidence of what it was that I was creating, because I was doing something that was very different from the contemporary quilters that I was working with. Now, we have to think back. This is in the 1980s, and patchwork quilting meant triangles and squares, and it didn't mean African mask and applique. And so I needed a little bit of a push to be confident about what I was creating. And I received that from the nurturing of other women in the quilt group. And Adelia Moore was one of my cheerleaders. And she encouraged me, just do it. And she gave me the confidence to not worry about other people's opinion about the work that I was doing. And from that, I kind of jumped off. So I became very creative in the way that I approached the artwork. I had a formal training as an interior decorator and advertising and merchandising, so I had some design elements that I could work with, but the fiber and the color, all of that comes from Dean Kanzani at Columbus College of Art and Design, who really grilled us in how to use color properly and to make the color move. So I just applied what I already knew to from my training to the work that I was doing, and moved into the story quilt. But at the story quilt just didn't happen. You have to have a story. I made work that was abstract and more impressionistic. But when I showed my first work, someone asked me what it meant. How is this supposed to mean something? And so I thought, I really need to put meaning into my work. So my subject matter became culturally relevant, which is the African-American experience in America and on the continent. And then in the 90s and into 200, I started to work more about the African experience as well as the diaspora. So there, in a lifetime, I'll never finish all my studies. And I'm constantly working.
That's something you talk about in the program, Pennsylvania Folklore Woven Together. You talk about kind of having this realization that people weren't being taught African-American history, and how that was something you really intentionally set out to learn about yourself and also to incorporate in your art as a teaching tool.
Yes, and I guess more than anything else, I've had a lot of people that have helped me on this journey to give me the confidence, to boost me along, and to give me the exposure to work with children. I'm not just an artist. I'm a teaching artist with the Pennsylvania Council on the Art, and I'm very passionate about teaching children, working with children, and giving them the confidence to know that they had a part in building America as well. My mother worked with Head Start, and her philosophy was that you teach the children and they will teach the parents. Sometimes it's difficult to educate adults on something that they're already supposed to know. And because of the lack of, a lack of information available in the time that I'm 68 years old, so during my experience of education, we did not have the material available. So as I learned from my elders about the information about the African diaspora, I put it into the quilts. So I built the quilts, and then I used them as teaching tools in my classroom.
I'd want to talk more about your teaching, but first I wanted to kind of get at a basic talking about a story quilt. And what's the difference between a story quilt, like the kind you make, and a quilt you might just go buy in a store because it's pretty?
Most of my work, all of my work now all has elements of applique imagery, and it's all African imagery. Yeah, I think that I am known as an African-American inspired artist because most of the symbols that I use and the sculptures, I use sculpture inspiration to support my material. So the process is this. I use the strip quilting process, which is the kente cloth from Ghana, is usually about 6 inches wide. And so those strips are woven, and then they're sewn together, and they make a whole cloth. So I use that concept, and sometimes we call that in America, which is the strip quilting or log cabin process. And so the log cabin was one of my favorite patterns to use. After I do the background, then I take the symbols that relate to the story that I'm trying to tell, and I start to cut them out and apply them with needle and thread as a puzzle piece. So they moved throughout the whole canvas of the work. So I do them in a rotation. So I use one layer of strip quilting, one layer of applique, and then I introduce a transparent fabric, usually organza. Sometimes it's stamped, and sometimes it's just in a particular shape that I want to emphasize. And so that's the third layer. Then all three of those layers then are put on top of batting and a backing and a sewn. I like to use crazy quilt patterns, which would be chain stitch and a blanket stitch, and I use a X stitch that I learned from Risa Nagin, who taught me how to apply transparent fabrics. So does that give you an indication on how these quilts come together?
Absolutely. And so you talked about using patterns. Do you still use patterns when you quilt?
The patterns that I use are my own patterns. I take the symbols and sometimes I blow them up, I repeat them. But mostly the traditional patterns no longer are included in my work. My earlier works, I used them to actually support the story. But at that time, I felt that I needed to prove myself as a traditional quilter. So I can quilt. I can put patterns together. I know how to do all of that. But my preference is not, because I feel like if you can tell the story without doing so much labor, then, you know, try it, because we are all struggling with time now. And because my husband and I had a jazz club and a large facility in Homewood, I did a lot of my quilting during the 90s in the middle of the night. And it was my control factor. So I controlled my life through my fabric. So I developed a faster process to create the artwork because I felt like I needed to tell these stories, and I didn't have the time allocated to support what I was doing with my husband, as well as raising my family and doing the work in the community. And so, go ahead.
I was going to say Homewood, the community where you live in Pittsburgh, has been a major part of your work. How has the community of Homewood influenced you and your art?
Well, it's all intertwined because I guess when I started out, I was just a resident and a mother and a community person. And then at the urging of my husband and Reverend Darkins and Leroy Patrick and Sarah Trowler, we took on this project to hold this land, which is called the Greater Pittsburgh Coliseum. And through that, I got to know my neighbors, and I got to know the people that come into Homewood. And it was a wonderful thing because it was a safe place. We had people that came from all over the region. And so as they came in, I liked to stand at the door and greet them. And people wanted to know where I was from. It's like, why are you standing here making, you know, like, small talk? And I found that people just needed to be recognized. And as I interacted with my customers, they all were so willing to tell their stories. And then I found out that we have so many wonderful stories in Homewood that needed to be told. So I used my customers as a touchstone for the stories that I needed to tell. And the piece that is at the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts in Harrisburg, the Art of the State, they collected the piece in 1998. It's called Yo Bloodline, and it won a purchase prize award as part of their collection. But that came out of my actual working with students. I've been working with this Society for Contemporary Crafts for 22 years, and they placed me in a school where the children really were losing contact with their families. So we had a project that would get them to go home and talk to their families about the generations, the richness, because I think that was one of the most important things about Pittsburgh that's so unique is that people were so rooted in where they came from. And so I wanted to have that be part of my community. Where do you come from, and what makes you special, and what do you have to be proud of? So it's about identity. And so I did this piece called Yo Bloodline, which really talks about the struggles of the African-American community. And it's a piece where women are given a very prominent role of holding up the tree of life, and the men have a masculine role of protection. But it goes through the whole series of wars. But at the very top, which is the voice of the young people, that because at that time in the 90s, there was a lot of trauma that was going on in our community for our children. And I felt that that was also a war that they were fighting. So they had the signature figures, which is kind of a flat figure, but they all had on baseball caps and they were on backwards. And they were leading the fight for the 90s. So I wanted them to know that they had something to be proud of and that this wasn't the first time that there was a struggle and they too would survive. So it resonated, and, you know, it's still one of my favorite pieces to talk about.
These quilts are obviously very deeply personal to you, and you talk about your connection to identity through them. What kind of emotion goes into the making of the quilt, both in terms of the subject matter and your process and taking the time to actually create this piece and put so much into it?
Well, I think that's the role of an artist and a community artist in particular, because you're an observer. You're an observer of what's going on, and you're also listening. And when you listen and connect, there is an emotional connection between you and the people telling the stories. So with that being said, I have been listening to the stories. My husband's a historian. I listen to what he has to say. His father was an educator as well. So I've been a good listener over the period of time. So I have a treasure trove of information and stories that need to be told. But they change from time to time because of, you know, we are observing a lot of, I guess I would consider it trauma now. And so pick a card, any card. And you know, so I have a lot of work to do. And what I do, though, is I feel like this is not just my mission, that it is everyone's mission. and giving people tools to be able to create their own stories and to release things that are bottled up in them. It becomes like an art therapy. So I'm not special. I'm not the greatest educated person in the world, but I know how to connect to people, and I know how to empower people to be able to create. And I think that's my greatest gift from God, is to be able to create and to inspire others to do the same. So I have a lot of little soldiers out there.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Lindsay Whistle Fenton. Our guest is Tina Williams Brewer, a story quilt artist based in Pittsburgh. Tina, you've just talked, and you talked earlier about your teaching and about your ability to empower others to create. You devote a lot of time to that teaching, and I'm wondering if you can tell us about some of the residency programs you do with some of the schools in Pittsburgh.
Originally, I was when I started out, I was outside of Pittsburgh. I was so I call myself an ambassador for Homewood, because people were very shocked to know that that's where you live, in that place. And it's like, yes, that is my home. And so I went into the suburbs. I talked about with the African American experience and giving the tools to the young people to explore their backgrounds, and but I gave it to them through the eyes of an African experience. But they then had the option of bringing in their own symbols from their own culture. And it's surprising that many of the students would choose the African symbolism, the corpus of symbols that I would give them from Ghana. They're called Ndinka symbols, but there are other symbols that also that I have a collection of. So I've been in the suburbs, and then I realized that I needed to come in because our children were suffering, and they needed to be able to make art, and art heals. And so I've been working with I worked for 4 years with the culturally responsive art education with the Pittsburgh Public Schools Institute. And I was in, I was in about four different schools in 4.5 years. And I hope that I was able to inspire the kids. But we used this method of exploring and keeping a record. And I worked with students for almost the entire time that I was with the program. And they actually made each semester a story quilt, and the story quilts were small, maybe 10 inches, and we called them lacasas. Now, a lacasa is a memory board, and I use them often as I describe my work, because each block that the children did really represented something that they had learned and that they had retained from the lectures. We brought in the math, the science, and the cultural experience. And so they did the reflection piece, and then they learned to make the quilt, you know, how to make a quilt, whatever. But every semester they made one. And by the time they finished the 3 years, they had six blocks that they attached, and it looked like a scroll. So they had something at the end of their experience with the culturally responsive art education that really reflected everything that they learned over the period of 4 years, 3 years. And so I use the lacasa for myself because I have so many ideas that are going on in my head that I need something that I can touch and kind of run my hand across to keep me centered in the stories, because there are so many stories that need to be told. And so I've been also in private schools. I worked with the students at Falk, and they did a quilt. So I have installations in quite a few schools throughout the Pittsburgh area, and some in the suburbs.
You've talked about that fiber being so accessible to people in a way that maybe other art forms aren't, and also about fiber being able to stand the test of time, something like a quilt being able to kind of survive through the years. And you've said you've seen students that you've had who 20 years down the road will tell you they still have their quilts.
Oh, yeah. And West Liberty was the first school that I went to, and I worked with, I've been able to be blessed to work with masterful teachers as well, because, again, I'm not a trained teacher, but Valerie Westcott was the teacher that I worked with for 10 years, and then I worked 3 years with Megan Majors through the Society for Contemporary Crafts. And the students that I run into that still remember Miss Tina, they know that they still have that piece. Now, there's something about a piece of paper that you could toss in the trash can, but after you've invested your time and effort in your story, and it is your emotional connection to that, they hold on to it, and they have it in their drawer. So we try to instill that they are the story keepers for their home, for their family. If their grandparents have forgotten, which happens because we're all so busy now, then you can be the storyteller in your family, and you can bring it out every Thanksgiving and sit it in the middle of the table and say, let us tell the story of our family. So, just trying to keep that alive.
There's often a debate about the value of arts education and whether or not it should have a place in curriculum, especially with schools facing funding challenges and budget shortfalls. So what benefit do you see from students drawing who are learning to do something like quilting through one of your residency programs?
Well, I am such a, I'm a different type of learner, first of all. So I know that people learn in different ways. And I think that recorded history is really important. But once you see something and you hear it, it sticks a lot longer. And so being able to create something from your brain that connects with something that you heard or you read, really, it sinks in deep. And because the visual arts make an impression, maybe you didn't remember the whole story, but you had an impression or of what it looked like or the music that you heard or the movement of the dance. And so when I talk about my quilts, I always talk about how I go to cultural events and then I'm inspired. If I close my eyes, I can see the movement in my head, the music, how it resonates, and it kind of unearths a certain emotion for you. So the way of pulling in information is different for all people. So when we rely only on the written word, I think that we're missing a whole opportunity to connect with other mediums and other ways of thinking. And the creative process is basically how everything starts, through the creative process. I talked with a gentleman from out in Seattle once, and Mr. Thornhill, and he said that before there is any type of development that happens, there's always the creative process. They have the artists come in first and do the vision. So, you'll see before development, even community development, you have the vision of the artists that come in and kind of light up. They light up the spark. They shine the light. So without the arts, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine the world without it.
Another aspect of education that you're involved with is history, and we touched on this a little earlier. You and your husband own the Trolley Station Oral History Center in Pittsburgh. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I guess that, this is a full circle experience. I mean, the art came from the children and from the adults that came to our jazz club, but also we were both inspired by this idea of the La Casa, which was a memory board. And that because Homewood wasn't just, it was when my husband grew up, my husband's 72 years old, he grew up there. It wasn't an African-American community. It was a community that involved all people. And so in order to bring the memories and the people back to the land that they remembered, we thought if we started to talk about showing the photographs. So we used the photographs as La Casa. And then my husband became involved with the Carnegie Museum and with the Pittsburgh Courier Archives. And so we had a avalanche of stimuli to work with. And so we said that it would be wonderful to be able to put these photographs up on the walls, have people come in, and we did a lot of political events. So people would come in, and immediately they would be driven over to the trolley, and I remember riding the trolley. So the trolley ride was, a conduit for conversation for people who had nothing else in common. So we did that, and then my husband also graduated from Westinghouse. Didn't graduate. He graduated from Peabody. He went to Westinghouse High School, and so we have a wall of fame that's also part of the facility that spotlights the African-American graduates of Westinghouse High School, and it is a phenomenal thing to see. So people, when they come for entertainment, they walk around and they remember. So it's about remembrance, I guess. We're all needing to remember, especially when we're sitting in spots that are very uncomfortable. We need to remember a better day.
In 2009, you were honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, that, I was a little embarrassed, to tell you the truth. I had these wonderful people, Laura Demensick and Martha Wasik and Laura Horner, who just thought that it was the greatest thing ever. And they maybe get a website, and they maybe get organized with my artwork, and to get myself organized. And it was wonderful because during the time that it happened, I was struggling with an illness with my mother, and she passed before the Lifetime Achievement Award. But my father was able to come up, and my sisters, and I felt really embraced by the people that had come to celebrate with me. A little bittersweet, but looking back on it now, I'm so glad that I have good friends, because my journey has been about good friendships and people who are interested and people who take the time to go the extra mile. That's it.
You talked earlier about how the focus of your quilt has evolved over time, and I know your work has moved from kind of your personal and identity history to exploring the community to exploring existential and spiritual matters. Where do you think you'll go next?
I don't know. I've really been thinking about what I need to leave behind for my grandchildren and for my children. And so I think that getting everything down and organized, first of all, will be really important. And just recently, I lost two of my really important quilts. So I think that I needed that to happen to be able to say, you know, I've taken a lot of this for granted, that I've been given this wonderful gift to be able to explore and to tell these stories. And I carry them in and out of schools and different venues, that I need to take a little bit more time to chronicle the work that I've done and to talk about it a little bit more, so that we have a very good record of the story quilts that I've done. And I really, really, really am excited to be able to explore more of the spiritual aspects of the work, because as I get older, I'm Catholic, and so I always kind of look back and always overlapping the Catholicisms and the Africanisms together, and so most of the work is there. And I want to make sure that people understand that. So I'm going to try to be more organized, and I'm showing outside of Pittsburgh a lot more. I have a one-person show that is going to be in Dallas, Texas in 18, and so I'm excited about producing new work for that. So up and at 'em.
Tina, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Tina Williams Brewer is an award-winning story quilt artist based in Pittsburgh. She's one of four artists profiled in the WPSU-TV program Pennsylvania Folklore Woven Together, which will air on Thursday, December 21st at 8 p.m. To see some of Tina's quilts, visit our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Lindsay Whistle-Fenton, WPSU.